when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Robert?
Today, Russell, I am feeling limitless.
Oof.
And I'm feeling limitless on the occasion of the fifth anniversary of this very podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
We have been doing this for 5 whole years.
Happy birthday to us.
Also relates to our guest today because they have been working for 5 decades, maybe even a bit more. I think 55 years, perhaps. So there's 2 fives there. And today's guest is the perfect guest to celebrate our fifth anniversary because we've wanted to speak to her since the beginning. We had the great privilege of walking around in Brick Lane in a building with her where she guided us and toured us personally around the Amazing Traces exhibition, which actually was so perfect to kind of see all these core elements to the way that the practice and the way that her mind works. And she's been quite an influence on my life since my teenage years. And you and I have both dedicated our lives to art, as has she. And she is an example for everybody listening that if you do dedicate yourself and live for art, you can free yourself. And I think for me, she's been a real enlightener. And she has described herself as a warrior of performance art and for me, just of art, and maybe even the grandmother now. But I really do think she takes this role of an enlightener because she brings light to dark places, and she has liberated her own body and is still kind of on this journey to freeing her mind. Mm. And in doing so, frees the audience's mind and hopefully encourages all of us to live a better life. So we would like to welcome to Talk Art Marina Abramovic.
Wow, what introduction. But let's go a little bit backwards. You know, you're talking about art, and I'm doing art. And you know that for 55 years, I still have the same question coming back. Why is art what I'm doing? And this is incredible. And we are 21st century, and I still people asking the same question. And it's like, you know, when I travel in a plane, and somebody asks me, you know, they want to talk, and I want to just sleep. And next to me, and then they ask, you know, what are you doing? What the hell I can say what I'm doing? And how I can explain to anybody what I'm doing? So my really cover is so simple. I'm the nurse from New Zealand, and I come to your country to study health program. Nobody talk to me. It's so perfect. And this really works every time. But because, you know, it's so difficult to describe performance art, to explain, you know, it's such an immaterial form of art. You know, it would really, you know, how that works. You have to be there. You have to be a time to see it, and it's highly emotional. And that's, you know, something that's not easy. I have the friend of mine who is American. He say, I hate you, art. I say, why? He say, always make me cry. Because They like to, you know, get art through the brain, but not through the body. Okay, let's start.
I used the word limitless in the introduction because it was actually an instruction that you gave in a set of instructions for an artwork that you created in the Ukraine, which is the amazing wall with crystals. And I wanted to talk a bit about that instruction because I loved the duration was limitless.
You know, talking about war, wow, I mean, let's go into all these wars we are right now.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of really something that bothers me incredibly. war in Ukraine was something so simple for me to react. I was actually the first artist after only 3 hours of invasion who gave full, you know, statement and complete kind of support to Ukraine, because it was very clear what's happening. And, you know, I only made this war like 2 months before. 2 months before, you know, the Zelensky, you know, the inaugurate Babi Yar, because there was nothing to remind people of the enormous atrocity of 33,000 Jewish people killed in 3 single days and in mass graves. So when he was Jewish and he came and said, let's make the something people can remember. And I was thinking how I can actually create the prolongation of the war of crying from the Jerusalem all the way to Ukraine, and really use the coal as their own material, which is black and dark, and then just taking crystals from Brazil, put them there, and the people have to press their head, their heart, and stomach against it, and just really, as there is a cleaning process, but also remembering. And for that occasion, for the opening of this Babi Yar, came the president of Germany, president of Israel, and Zelensky himself, and all faced the wall. All they really, you know, they done this kind of cleaning process, and all they give statement that this should in humanity never happen. 2 months later, they bombed the television tower, which is just 100 meters from the wall, and which is incredible, the wall is still there. But not only is it still there, it's absolutely in perfect condition. Nobody cut the crystal. No, nobody could break the crystal. There's no vandalism, nothing. And then the you know, thinking if the wall survive, which it'll be a miracle, then can you imagine? I will be first artist who actually create monument for two the terrible moments of human history. The one is Nazi, and one will be the Russians. But then you go into that perspective. But then you see what's happening with Israel and Palestine now. I have no opinion. I have the first time I'm in kind of catatonic position. I can't understand. No, first of all, I can't make my mind. You know, I can't react because I can't be for one or for another. Both of them, they're just about to extinguish each other. This is so wrong. So I'm only thinking how I can deal with this is a sentence of His Holiness, you know, Dalai Lama. He said long time ago, he said, only way that we can actually learn to forgive, we can stop killing. And this is all about forgiveness, that not civilizations of this human existence on this planet, we still didn't learn a simple thing to forgive.
Do you feel a responsibility when you look at the state of the world with your art to comment, to make work?
Yeah, I do. I really think that right now we have to do cleaning of, you know, of the our mind and our you know, thinking process. We really have to understand who are we? We are humans. What we stand for and what is really not acceptable and what is acceptable. And my belief is only by changing yourself you can change others. There's no, you know, I also think that this politician today, they should read Gandhi biography, because Gandhi made entire revolution in his own country without spitting one drop of blood, nothing. It was just the other way. And we are not looking to other way. We are looking in a kind of brutalist, you know, the medieval way.
It's medieval. It's
you know,
barbaric,
kill everybody, you know, put the bombs, get nuclear weapons and just make a third world war.
And if you think about that word forgiveness, I know that you've experienced real deep forgiveness in your relationship and the last kind of 3 years of the life of Ulay. Yeah. But can you think about forgiveness throughout your life? Like, not just that one example, because I know you've documented that quite a lot. But have you been able to forgive, like, other people? Or what is the power for you of forgiveness?
You know, it's so easy to say I forgive, so difficult to do. I mean, to do really truly. I think I've done it only twice in my life, one to my mother and one to Ulay. Because my mother, you know, it was such a difficult relation. I mean, she never kissed me in my life. She never touched me. And I never understand why. And she always say, I don't want it to spoil you. And only when she died, I find her diaries under the bed. And if I read one page of this diary, my relation to my mother would be completely different. But actually, it was too late. Because what she wants, she had such a difficult emotional life. And she never wanted to admit any of this. So she wanted to make me literally, you know, like Amazon woman, make me warrior that actually I don't suffer like she did. But actually she made me suffer because, you know, I never felt loved from her and I never felt that I could impress her by anything, that I could achieve anything. Always somebody else was better. And finally, when I gave her my book, my work, she actually re-edited and every photo that I was naked or half naked, she took it out. So the big book from, I don't know, 300 pages went to 26 pages that she can show to her neighbors. That was a big addition. This was brutal.
And actually, the kind of start of your artistic journey starts in childhood. I heard you talking about playing with shadows, and I found that such a beautiful kind of concept, this idea of light and darkness. And there's a really beautiful quote from 2006 where you said, "From darkness one can't escape, but sometimes with great effort, light can be created in it."
Yeah. No, this really, it's so interesting you mentioned this. You know, when I published my biography with this 70, I was exactly 70, and it's called Breaking the Walls. It was in the same day came article in New York Times and the same day in Guardian, exactly the same day. Guardian was like the best book ever, superlative. And the one in Times, the start like this, the soon as I read that Marina Abramović didn't play with the dolls, but play with the shadows, I knew I would hate this book.
Oh, really?
This is, he just mentions there's something you like. This was the guy who was so irritated. Like, oh my gosh, she's playing with the shadows. I hate the book. Anyway, you know, there's also Leonard Cohen, what he said, that the light come in from the crack of the darkness, then let the light come in. Something, I think, is a song about mm-hmm. it. I don't remember the words exactly. But this is really important that actually darkness and light, they're together. They're inseparable. You know, the one thing, one side is dark, one side is light. But we need to actually create balance between both. That's the only way.
I think it's a spirituality in your work that I really respond to. And I think it's this, I'd love to talk about daily practices. I've watched a few videos where you take time to drink a glass of water and you really appreciate the glass of water, or you write your name over an hour, or you count grains of sand and you say that there's a whole universe in the slowing down of time. And today I did an experiment with myself with my dog, who I love dearly, who's 11, and he's getting old and he doesn't walk as much. And I normally take him outside, he does his peeing and pooping, then I carry him up and take him upstairs. But today I picked him up, I cradled him, and I walked really slowly around the block with him, step at a time, thinking about the way that you slow down time and your daily practices. I made myself cry, and I was just with him. We were just together in a completely different kind of pace of time. And I'd love to know about your daily practices. What does Marina practice daily? Is there things that you have to do, like what you've told us through your art that we should all be doing, but what do you do?
You know, nothing that actually become the kind of the everyday thing, you know, like you, I'm so much against the kind of something that you have to do every day. You know, I always think that the feeling is so important, what the body tells you to do, because, you know, the body wisdom is the oldest wisdom of the all. So, like, I know the people who run, they have to run every day and they don't run, they feel miserable. But I hate this kind of routine. I hate any routine. You know, there's days when I wake up, like this morning, I wake up 7 and I went to swim. And it was really important to just swim in the pool downstairs, you know, and I swim plops up and down, up and down, up and down. And then I felt great. But the day before this, I just overslept and I didn't do anything. So, but then it was so good for me because I felt really, really well. So I think that the kind of feeling that something that we never actually live, and it's so important to live by intuition, which feeling is today to do. Because the body really have wisdom. And the body is not always that you have to do things regularly. Like in my case, I hate studio. I never wanted to work in studio. To me, studio is a trap. It's like a guys who work in office, they go in the office to work every day. Studio, if you sit in studio and you try to kind of think about rationally of what great idea you're going to get. This is so incredibly artificial. The ideas have to come from life. And then you go to studio to realize them. But you have to come as a surprise, like a three-dimensional image in your head, like going to the toilet or cutting garlic or, you know, sitting with the friends. And then idea appear out of nowhere. You know,
are you always alert for it, though? Are you always ready for an idea? Or do you ever put yourself in a situation where you go, I want an idea to come to me?
You know how you work. First, you work like hell to do stuff, you know, like whatever, you're traveling or planting the cabbage in the garden, and you're so tired, and then you just go to sleep and you wake up and idea is there and comes from nowhere. The idea comes when your body physically is exhausted. Then the mind have this freedom to kind of work. I mean, Einstein got idea not because sitting in lab, got idea because sitting in the train and traveling somewhere. You know, first you have to do everything and then let it go.
So you kind of tire yourself out
and then let it go. Let it go but you have to go to 150% of doing something and then just let it go, and things happen by itself. But you have to trust in the process, you know, because we always get panic and we always have to do too much. And, you know, when an artist, you just, when you're working, you think, oh, this is not enough. I have to add this and this and that. And this is mess and unnecessary. I learned that you don't need nothing. I mean, I had a chair and two tables with artists, and the table artist is present. Then last month I realized I don't need a fucking table. I get table out. And there was just two chairs. And this was just the right thing. But then you have to really understand the energy and understand that actually the nothing is just beginning of something.
Do you panic as an artist?
In the beginning, yes. Yeah. Now less.
Of every project or at the beginning of your career?
But oh my God. In the beginning, I panic for everything. And if I don't panic, I panic why I don't panic. So you have to panic.
I do that.
But then...
why am I not anxious? I'm anxious now, yeah.
But the moment you're there in front of the public, this disappears completely. Then you have to be there in the moment. And it's so important not to prepare. You know, you have to prepare before.
That's why you never rehearse these things.
No. I just go and stand and talk. The biggest talk I ever done, as an artist ever done, it was in Kaunas last year. 6,000 people in stadium, basketball stadium. And that was big. I just arrived and it was just a sea of people. And then I just stand there and you have to feel them, you have to feel energy. Yeah. And then something comes through you. You have to trust that things come through you. You have to be like open like a didgeridoo. You have to be open. But if you're filled with your shit, you can't everything let anything get into you. Because the ideas, you know, to me, who create limits is us. And the ideas come from outside. You have to let them flow inside you and outside of you.
Do you love an audience? Because I've also read that at the beginning of your career, you were quite shy, but you were a performance artist. Yeah. You would have an audience, but you didn't really want them to look at you, but yet the work you were making was giving them a permission to stare.
No, I really love audience. I love this statement that the Mater Graham say, everywhere you stand is a holy, everywhere a dancer stand is a holy ground. So for me, everywhere the public stand is a holy ground. If I have a lecture and somebody go to the bathroom, I see it. I'm waiting till this person come back from the bathroom. If that doesn't come from the bathroom, I'm very worried because something is wrong with the tension of the space. You know, every single person is important.
You absorb everything.
Incredibly. And you know, so many artists, performers have completely different ideas. You say, I don't feel audience. I don't care about audience. I'm in my world. For me, it's just the opposite. For me, the audience world and my world become one.
And is that exhausting or is that give you life affirming?
It's the only way. You know, you get all this energy. It's much more a problem is when the audience leave. What you do with all this energy you get in. This is what
That's
I call...
That's what I mean. Yeah, what do you do then if you're absorbing
ha, ha, ha,
all
ha, another question. So, first of all, I have the word for this called body drama. So what's the body drama? Body drama you can experience especially with musicians. When you have 300,000, you know, audience and then you're performing and audience is going crazy and you're taking energy for audience and you're giving audience back and this is all happening. But then lights go down, the audience leave and you are left with all this energy. That energy is killer. This is why you can't come down. This is why you have to take heroin. You have to take drugs. You have to drink. You just can't go and sleep because you are like, you know, completely filled with this energy. So this is where actually comes incredible knowledge of Eastern, you know, Eastern people, what they do Japanese, what they do Buddhists, what they do Aborigines, what they do shamans. I learned from them that actually this is incredibly important, how to take this energy and actually turn around and become energy you nourish you and not destroy you. That's the body drama, you know.
And how do you do that?
I do. Okay, I give you one thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and not just to you, for the public. All right, you wake up, let's say, it's Friday or no, Saturday morning or Sunday, whatever. You wake up and you're so fresh and you're full of energy. You're like, what a wonderful day. And it's sunny outside and it's very great. So you have these millions of plans. You're going to call the friends. You're going to do this. You're going to shop. And you spend all this energy and you feel totally exhausted then. But what if you have all this energy and you totally do the technical detox? You take the computer out, you switch your telephone, you switch your watch, you put it away. Find a very, very nice place in a corner of your room. Can be look in the garden or outside of the window, something quiet. And you just sit on the chair and do absolutely nothing. But you have all this energy, but you do nothing. This is incredible, interesting what happened. That energy, instead of spending it, start going inside of you. And this is like totally nourishing you. And you feel incredibly charged. But not just charged, you also feel aware of what's going on here and here and everywhere else. So that's something that we have to actually, you know, take this energy and change the process and pattern.
I was really touched by a story you've told before about a monk who lived inside a cave and he was in complete darkness and they would bring him food every day, but he would never actually see the people who delivered the food. And then you got to meet him later. Can you speak a bit about that element of energy?
Well, this is, I felt, actually in my life, I met some incredible people in my journeys in this part of the world, you know, because they have totally different relation to the body and mind than we do. We are technological society who cut all our actually qualities. We don't follow intuition. We have insomnia. We take pills to sleep. We don't, you know, use telepathy because we use telephone. But all these people are different. So that monk, you know, this is one of the Buddhist teaching to go, especially, you know, the retreat of 10 years in the cave. And the food will be bring to him only once a day in the front of the cave, but he doesn't see anybody at all. So this guy came out. It was in Dharamsala, in the monastery Tushita in the Himalaya. And I was gassed. I had done my retreat there too, but it was only 3 months, very different. And I came out of retreat and I was gassed of the monastery. And he just came out of the cave. So we sit literally having the meal. And they let me sit next to him. And it was like a fireplace. He doesn't speak one word of language that I could communicate with, but it was not necessary. It was just incredible well-being and feeling. I felt like I am literally sitting at the fireplace. That was it. It was so. If this man goes in the middle of New York or London or everywhere, you know, he can change just by his own presence the entire thing around him.
I was really fascinated by the set of rules as well around it, because it seems like that relates so much to everything that you've done in your work, that kind of discipline at the core of the practice that you have. But, you know, like him being inside for 10 years, it's similar to like things that you've made as artworks. Can you speak a bit about discipline and how that sort of empowered you and moved you forward?
You know, it's so interesting how discipline, motivation, and willpower is extremely important for development of this kind of abilities. Without this, you can't do it. You absolutely have to have discipline, motivation, but really like rigorous, like there's no question. You know, I mean, I just tell you the simple example for me that when the artist is present, I build a simple chair, and this chair, you know, I wanted to have monastic chair, so I didn't want it to put the arms, because it looked too luxury for me. And the moment I sit the first 3 days, I made a huge mistake, because it was so incredibly painful. Because when you sit without arms, it's nothing that can lift you. So all ribs actually moving, going to the into the stomach. And the moment your position is curving your back, it's so painful. It's incredibly painful. And like, you know, it's just almost unsustainable. But I didn't want to change because I was too proud. After 3 days to change the chair, it was unthinkable. So I didn't change. So I had to deal with all this pain. And then this thing with the discipline, because, you know, every time you blink, you're thinking. But the not blinking is not thinking. And when you not think, you actually see the other person in true reality. So that to me was important, you know, not blinking and not moving, no matter what, not moving. So the pain gets so high, to the point that, I was saying to myself, if I don't move, I'm going to just faint. And yet I still don't move. And I say to myself, so what? Then faint. But when you say to yourself that you get to that limit, the pain disappears completely. And this is incredible. But you can't actually get to there till you really get there. And to get there, you have to reach that limit. And when the pain disappears, I could not believe that I discover how much space I have in my body that I can move without moving. There's a space between kidneys and ribs. There's space between liver and the heart. There's plenty of space. So you actually, just by concentrating on your breathing, you can move entire body and the pain is not a question anymore. But to discover that, it's only way through hell. And you have to get to that point, and you can get only discipline. There's no other way. But when you know that it's there, then you know. And I can't explain to anybody till they really go into experience.
Have you ever met anyone who's similar to you, who's able to channel this sort of endurance within yourself as they are in their sort of life?
As a normal human. No, I mean, the monks, yes, and the people who deal with this kind of exercise, which I learned from them, you know. But I want to say, like now, I just had the re-performer of Elke Leuten. She performed now the 12 Days House with Ocean View. She just finished 4 days ago. I was so proud of her. It's a very difficult piece because the other piece is because of the old restrictions. You know, there are 2 hours, 1 hour, half an hour. But this piece was 12 days, no food of any kind, just water from the tap. You pee out in the front of the public. You take a shower. You sleep on the wooden bench. You know, the 12 days in the Royal Academy. It was not easy at all because I know how difficult it is also mentally and psychologically in every way. And she really did it. You know, it was incredibly moving. On the end, it was like, I was looking to my piece and it was emotionally kind of detached from my work because work started living through other people. It was really very, very strong experience. And then I remember the last day, 3 monks came and they understood exactly what she's doing. They just sit last 3 hours with her, just probably, you know, it was so incredible. The last day, the room was absolutely filled with people because this piece is about purification of yourself without taking food, but also you purify the molecules of the air you're sitting. This affects everybody. People don't know why they're not leaving, but they're sitting there and they're crying and they're still there. And this is the piece that nothing going to happen. There's no beginning. There's no end. There's nothing to do. There's no kind of plot that you have to kind of follow. You're just there in the presence. But the thing with the presence is that when you are really in the presence, in your mind, in your body, time don't exist. There's no time. Time is related to something happened in the past, going to happen in the future. But that moment is nothing's happening. And then you, with the public, they got just kind of drawn with her into that here and now. It was unbelievable. I mean, it was so strong. It's just... Now the next one is 6th of November. You should really to come to see the last days because it's like, you need 3-4 days. It's difficult without eating. And then once you go into this another level.
And you made that work in 2002 for the first time in New York. Yeah, and it was after September the 11th. And I know that the audience who actually came in New York when you were performing it, they would come for like half an hour, but they stayed 4.5 hours and didn't realize they'd been there that long.
No, exactly. And it was really important to me that one person came almost every day, Susan Sontag. And when I finished, but I didn't see her, you know, because it was all the public, you know, in a group. But then what happened after I finished 12 days, people left for me so many stuff, boxes. They let me necklaces, they let me shawls, they let me little notes. And there was one napkin And it was written, just from the restaurant, it was written, this piece is great, let's have lunch, Susan. I was like, oh. And then I really, I've been for 4 years, the last 4 years of her life, really a friend of her. This is one of the person really completely fascinate me, the most incredible human. But this was amazing, that piece, the people just kind of come. See, the same happened. There's no difference. The people start coming. And then, you know, you come into museum, you mostly come to see once the show, maybe twice. But here, in that piece, there was a group of people who were just coming back and coming back. The people, the guards, was praying for her. Literally, the girl was, I don't know, from somewhere, Romania. She was literally praying the end of the day and the end, because she stayed all night there. And that was like completely changing kind of idea of normal public. Public become community, which actually is around performance, which normal public doesn't happen in the gallery or the museum. There's different public.
Do you think everybody has the potential to do what you do and what she does? Or do you think there's a certain group of humanity that have access to that ability?
You know, how you know you're an artist or you're not. I don't believe that you can become an artist. I believe that you're born like that, honestly, because it's kind of in DNA. You know, you can learn technique, you can learn lots of stuff, but you have to have certain, you know, especially as a performance artist, if you don't have charisma, you can't do anything. You can't. You know, the way how I check my students, I just ask them to stand in front of me 15 minutes in the front of like 20 people, 30 people. Just the way how they occupy the space, how the energy goes around. I mean, nothing they have to do. You know, they have potential, they don't. There's something really like that.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Do you think about your legacy then and your students? Is this something you really want to consider so the work can continue? Because as is performance art, if you're not performing it, who is?
But right now, like the 11 that we show in Elizabeth Hall, do you have a chance to see these guys?
No, sadly.
Oh, my God, this was kind of incredible. They perform 8 hours a day. They perform the original pieces. I'm not into do. They perform the pieces based on their own biography, their own country, their own ideas. But only the thing that we have in common, long duration. Some of them already discover long duration before we teach them. But some of them, I do the workshops, you know, to really learn long duration. Because long duration is different than any other form of art. You know, it's very easy to pretend something or to do something when it's short. But when it's long, you drop all the faces on earth into real self, into naked self. And you become vulnerable, but the public is vulnerable too, and you connect with the public the way that you never connect with anything else.
And also the Abramovich method, which you obviously have the Marina Abramovich Institute, which is thinking about legacy and the future, you know, when you're no longer here. And I love this idea now that new performers are able to take the works you made and kind of live them through their bodies so that it can live forever in a way.
You know, but my dream is actually, because I started this whole thing with the 7 easy pieces, when I choose 7 performances, not just my own, but the performances that I never witnessed, but but it was fascinating me, and I wanted to redo them to see for myself that I've experienced, but also to create some kind of really the order in this mess, because performance art was completely not be respectful to anything. You know, designers, the fashion, the MTV, the whatever was taking elements of performance and remixing them without paying any kind of respect to original ideas. Even young curators were curating young artists, redoing the pieces, saying this is the original, which is absolutely not right. And the kids didn't know history to actually see differently. So I was thinking, okay, I'm the only artist who still perform in my age. So let's make some order. Let's ask for permission of the artist himself. If the artist is dead, he's, you know, the foundation who is representing them. Let's pay for permission. Let's do performances. You add your own ideas, but in the same time, you always have to say where the source come. Same techno Bach, you play Bach, and then you want to have the disco Bach. You still have to pay for the permission. So this was really important, that kind of order. And then I made 7 easy pieces. So if you wanted to reperform, ask for permission, which actually people start doing it, which is really great. And now my dream is to create actually the history of performance art, but not performance art, futurist, fluxus, happening, dadaist. I mean, there was such amazing pieces in history. Plus, I have really memory of some works that nobody even think exist. James T. Byers, I mean, Eve Klein pieces. I mean, they were amazing stuff. So that actually the young generation can, you know, reperform them and actually learn from them. So this is another dream to create this kind of mega show of reperforming the pieces from history of art.
Are there pieces of yours that have been happenings that haven't been documented and archived that you could bring back?
You know, I would give permission for every piece. Yes, they are. But for every piece, it's the piece who really, you know, they have risk of life. Rhythm Zero, I would never give permission. But Rhythm Zero, somebody without any permission in Hong Kong, he performed it. Instead of pistol, he had a banana. I mean, you know.
Can we talk about Rhythm Zero?
Banana
then?
Or the pistol? Mm.
Can we talk about Rhythm Zero then for people that don't know what that was, that piece, which is so shocking and the capacity of what humanity can do to each other and how you put yourself there as an object for people to...
It's so interesting, it's so relevant, this piece, actually. Okay, you describe the piece, please.
Well, there's a table...
I can drink the water.
Yes, you drink your water then, very slowly. There's a table in front of you in a gallery space. There are 73 objects, I think.
72
objects. This 72. Was performed in 1974. There are soft objects, there's flowers, there's a feather boa, but then there's tools, there's a loaded gun with a bullet in, there's like a knife, and you invited the audience to interact with you in any way they saw fit with the objects that were on the table over a course of time. And as it started, people come up, they kissed you, they hugged you, they wrapped things around you, they gave you flowers. And then as the show went on and it got later into the night, there was a crowd formed, and then it became a bit more violent to the point where someone held the loaded gun to your neck and you took the gun. You were cut. I think afterwards you said that the trauma from this gave you white hair. It was such a traumatic event and it changed you, but it really traumatized you, but you put yourself through that. And then when the lights went on and the show was finished and they saw that you were actually a human being, people fled. They ran because they were scared of what they had actually done. You had given them license. It's like you'd said, you can do whatever you want. And if they would have killed you, you would have died that day. You were ready to die.
I was 23, my dear. Absolutely want to die for art, just to prove the point. And, you know, a part of this, little bit violent, you know, they will give me the rose and they will cut my clothes and then would take the thorns of the rose and stuck it in my body. They cut me and my neck still have scar and drink my blood. They will carry me around and then put me on the table, put knife between my legs. You know, the only reason why I was not raped, it was because there was a normal opening. People came with his wives. But women will say what to do. They never would touch me and they would take my tears away or take the sweat away from my forehead. It was very interesting.
Did you notice it was gendered then, what people were doing to you?
Yeah, and then was also interesting that there was in Italy, in Naples, and there was the stereotypes projected on me when you look at this piece is Madonna, mother, and a whore. Three stereotypes. It was, and then the that really I had on the statement on the table, I'm an object, you can do everything you want with me, including killing me. I take all full responsibility, 6 hours. And I was 23 in the time the performance was not taken is even as a form of art. And I say, okay, you're accusing me that's not art, and let's see what you can do to another human being. And it was really strong performance. It took me 42 years that from that performance, I got to the artist's present. Here, I really was playing with the low human being, you know, abilities. And in artist's present was all about putting the human being, putting being in a high consciousness, completely different. I have all restrictions. You can't touch me. You can't talk to me. Mm-hmm. You can only sit and have a gaze. That's it. And this changed everything. But took me, you know, 42 years to learn the lesson. And I was 65 when I did this piece, and I would never could do it when I was young. I didn't have willpower, courage, and this kind of understanding. I was not able to do this piece before.
How do you cope with that then at that age, experiencing that and knowing that that's what people could do to you in an art context? How do you carry on after that? What gives you the focus?
Very well.
Very well, right. Sorry.
No, honestly, whatever I'd done in the past, there was a reason and huge lesson to learn. And every performance bring me the new understanding, and each work actually continue to understand. You know, to me, if you see my show, the here at Royal Academy, it's all based on different subjects, the rooms, and the dates are mixed up, and the works, the old works talk to the young works, and the old and the new works, because the ideas are, you know, kind of mix up in like you start. The first two rooms is called the participation of the body, of the public, which is the rhythm zero and artist is present. Then you go to all communist era. Then you go to the limits of physical body with Ulay and myself. Then you go to absence of the body. Then you go to my relation to nature and minerals and energy. Then from there you go to coming and going, which is all about dying and you know, the temporality of our life and so on and so on. And then you finish with luminosity, which is really the highest state that I reached so far.
For me, the work has often been about some kind of transcendence, like within its core. I think in every work you've made, in a way, there's some element of trying to elevate the soul or to connect to some higher being somehow. And I don't mean religious or anything like that. I just mean in a soul sense. And that's, for me, like the power of art, is the depths of our soul and trying to connect to that. Have there been, is there like one example of a work where you really felt like you had actually transcended? Or is it always a bit frustrating? Is it hard to get to that place?
No, it's, you know, the latest work is definitely about transcending. You know, when I stand up from artist's present, I was not the same person. I was completely changed. I mean, to me, this was 3 months, 8 hours a day and 10 hours on Fridays. And it was so almost physically impossible. Every day could be the last. And I went through and I did it. And I stood up and I was different. I knew that I needed to open my institute. I knew that I want to have a legacy. I knew that my whole work is really to teach the power of long duration of work to everybody who wants to learn. I create a Abramovich method, because it's not just me and the artists who do that. Public have to learn how to look long durational. It's not easy to look at something which nothing is happening. But nothing is happening is the essence of everything. So they have to see where is the breathing, where is the feeling of their own body, how they just observe the light crossing the room. Maybe somebody just put the hand up. I mean, so little. You get boredom immediately if you don't understand, you know, actually the idea of present and here and now. And the boredom, actually to go through the boredom is the key of everything. John Cage talked about this. Namjoon Paigod talked about this. You know, the boredom is the first step opening the door of secrets, you know. And that's what we have to learn, and public have to learn. And now with the House with Ocean View, with Elke, I see we are doing the good job. I'm not performing there. She's performing, and she's translating this piece in the best possible way. And I have hundreds of people last day. Nobody moves. Nobody talks. People are crying and looking into nothing. Nothing is happening. She's just there. And it's like, wow. So it's working.
Do you have... boredom with it whenever you're performing? Do you have that boredom that comes to you as a performer?
You know, that's how I learned to go beyond. Now, I don't have boredom anymore. I'm beyond that a long time ago. But in the beginning, you know, it was not that I had the boredom. I was afraid that the public had the boredom. When you're young, you're afraid of all of this, how you translate your ideas. This is why you put too many shit in the space. That's why it's or too loud, or is sound, or is the projection, or is the... On the end, you start actually reduction. You take everything way, till nothing is there. And when it's nothing there, you reach the point.
When nothing's there, everything starts happening.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about simplicity and the kind of... Another thing I see in your work is that when you look back at photographs, it all looks really iconic, and that's because visually there's a simplicity to it. How hard is it to get an idea to be that pure, to be that close to truth? Because in your book that you've recently made, The Nomadic and it's an artist book you've made,
this Nomadic. It's done all stationary from the hotels,
yeah. Yeah, from different hotels, which is quite perfect right now because we're in a hotel.
did you see this other one?
Yes, yeah, I have that too.
A completely different system.
Yeah.
Actually done by me at all.
But I was interested in this idea that you make drawings as kind of like a precursor to what might become a performance. But how do you get that essence of truth or simplicity?
I start with chaos. I start with millions of ideas. It's like so much, and then reduction. If I look and say, okay, if I need 65 things to say one thing, can I do it with 35? Then maybe 25, then maybe 12, then maybe... And then I came to one, then I'm close to the truth. But I need to reduction. But you need to have... Mind is not simple. Mind is like Baroque mind, a million stuff. You know, when you do the Zen meditation, when you have to look into the white wall, this white wall is never white wall. It's a projection of millions of stuff. So you have to start with millions because that's a true mind. And then you have to kind of reduct, till you see just in between into this gap. And then comes just simple. But I also, the same amount of time you spend of creating idea, the same amount of time I spend if thinking how to record them, how there should be documentation. Mm. Everything is decided. You know, I'm really kind of important that the final result, you know, historically can stay for the public to understand in the most simple way.
Yeah. Are you spiritual? I know your grandmother was highly spiritual. Yeah. In this slowing down of time and being present for so long, do you feel like you're opening up channels to other, you know, opportunities to... Ghosts, for example. I've always felt like with you, there's this like, such an energy of like...
You know how dangerous is to talk with when you're talking about spirituality, ghosts and everything. It's in art context, you're immediately incredibly, you know, how you scrutinize and you're immediately the criticize, thinking, oh my God, you know, this is not art she's doing, this is a kind of new wave shit. And you immediately, you know, oh, crystals, this bullshit. So it's really complicated what we have to say and what we have not to say. You know, I was so interesting with Francis Bacon. So Francis Bacon had, you know, reconstruction of his studio and all his house
in
Dublin, which was so fascinating. Mm. And which I was so interesting that you can actually look through all books he had and what he inspired that actually he never talked about. He had the entire, his attraction to Theosophy, Madame Blavatsky, Gorgiev, all these people that I also had attraction to. But these books was all under his bed. And then you have to Google and you look at what he have under the bed and you discover this. It was so interesting how much stuff he actually, that he secretly been studying and been talking about. Mondrian also was interesting in the color combination, Sanskrit, and all of this. And you see him so abstract, you think there's nothing spiritual there. No, it's the spiritual element, every artist have to have it. The good art don't exist without spiritual element, really. But how much I see and what I do is going to be pretty much not to talk into art program. You have to, you know what, I've just been invited to speak about my work in a Tibetan monastery here in London. And it was so interesting. They they invite me, I just got an invitation yesterday, they invite me to speak about three things, about selfishness in relation to House with Ocean View, then the second one about the mortality in relation to Balkan Baroque piece, which I've done with Mons, and the third one, what was the third one? It's another one. The three, and between every of these subjects, is in monastery for 50 monks, you know, just totally closed situation. In between every of these subjects, they want me that all public, I mean, listening and me, meditate for 10 minutes. And this is amazing. I think I should put this together into my normal speeches. It was such an interesting concept. I just got the invitation. I'm going to do this in November.
What do you feel about selfishness? Because for an artist who you are the material, like, you know, your image is so present throughout the world now. What's it like being that dedicated to the self?
But it's not, you know, this is completely wrong concept, because I'm on the Ocean pictures that I'm creating kind of idol myself, which is completely opposite. I just use the human body. I present a body, anybody, you know, anybody, age body, young body, old body, fat body, skinny body, whatever. This is what I present. Right now, I present the body of 77 years old. I mean, oh God, my birthday is next month, 76 and a half. But, you know, and this is what I present. It is, and I think that that ego is the biggest obstacle for every artist. Ego is really when creativity stops, when you really think you're better than others, and you think that you're kind of genius or whatever. So whatever public project on me, I'm definitely not identified with that. I want to be, to me, humble is incredibly good quality. Yeah. And you know, thinking, you know, there's so much to learn in my life, never ending.
What are the rules you set for yourself? And do you ever break your own rules? Have you sort of set them from the beginning and they've changed, or have you stuck by them?
There's, again, who create the limits? You know, I send the rule that we not eat chocolate, and then I break them 3 hours later. Now, you know, another important thing, to see how imperfect you are. This is so healthy. You know, like, I always identify three marinas, which I talk in the book. The heroic marina, which is like the one really not afraid, can do whatever. Then spiritual one, and the bullshit one. But the three living so nicely in myself, because I'm not fighting them. They're all three. And, you know, it took me a long time to actually get this harmony, because I was so kind of ashamed to show the bullshit one.
Yeah, what is bullshit marina then? What does bullshit marina do?
Oh, my God, bullshit one is great. I mean, bullshit, have a good time. Bullshit one is lazy. Bullshit eat chocolate. Bullshit one look shitty movies. You know, the kind of, you know, trash time. Oh, it's such a relay. You know, every time I do something very strong, yeah, and very, very, you know, the demanding performance, bullshit come. Now we have bullshit time.
But you give yourself permission for the bullshit,
yeah,
marina.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good.
And before, you never would.
No. And I would be ashamed to do that. It would be a shame. And now not. You know, it's so interesting. As a kid, I would be so ashamed to, no, even now. I mean, if you'd ask me to take my clothes off, I would be incredibly ashamed to take clothes off as in a private situation. But if I have to perform 6,000 people with clothes off, I have no problem at all, because I'm presenting the work, not myself. Mm. This difference.
If we think about the idea of you as a nomad, I feel like the world really has been your stage. And you've made even like the film in 2016 in Brazil, which I just think is the most extraordinary documentary. I loved it. And then China, obviously, where you've walked the Great Wall of China and all these different places around the world. Do you really believe that like every person is the same at their core? Because I think I do, and I sometimes feel like we complicate everything through social structures.
We have same DNA, we're the same human beings. This is absolutely, there's no difference, except circumstances make us. But also, sometimes we can take, you know, the DNA from the parents and actually live their guilt problems, you know, through us, which is not our problems at all. Mm-hmm. We have to really find ourselves, who we are, and kind of, you know, separate from the past of the family, parents, everything. You know, in so many ways, I always feel that I was born in Yugoslavia by some kind of mistake with the parents I was born. That maybe, you know, why I was there. But in the same time, looking back, it was exactly the place where I should be. I learned everything there. You know, I learned discipline. I learned, you know, hardcore, you know, emotional detachment. We learned so much.
So before I go to these final questions, I really want to ask you a story about crystals and about how you went to this crystal mine. And you tell a story about this big geode that you found. I loved rocks and minerals when I was a kid. I went to the annual Rock and Mineral Society convention for my 8th birthday. I'm a big fan of minerals and crystals. But you cut open this geode and there was water inside that was 35 million years old. It had been encapsulated and you drunk it. And you said you felt sick afterwards. What happened? And what did they feel like?
I mean, what else to do with this water? You will drink it too, I hope. Because I was thinking, this is the purest water on the planet that you can possibly imagine. But look like the moment this water is open and in with our kind of atmosphere now, turn into poison. I have no idea. But I was so sick. I was sick for like about 10 days, really. And I had like a fever. I was vomiting. I was, you know, I have no idea what was in this water. But I was thinking that I'm drinking the purest memory of the planet.
Did they? Were they all saying to you, no, don't do this, Marina?
No, they didn't have time to say because I drink it immediately. They look at me. Anyway, for the miners, I was like a pure entertainment because when I come to the mine and I say, I want to lie in the mines and leave me there or sit in the mines just to wait till idea tell me what to do, that already was thinking I was cuckoo. Then when I told him I want to make amethyst shoes who are 70 kilo each, you know, that and this, and you can't walk in the shoes, but you can make mental departure. They also, then they give me up. Then they do whatever I was. I was for them like the most interesting human on the planet.
Do you live with crystals in your house?
I have so many, you have no idea. I'm like, I actually have the crates of crystals sent from Brazil to upstate New York.
Like for people listening, what is a crystal that we should all be living with? What's something we can use?
No, but first of all, crystals, look how much technology and right now in artificial intelligence, they're using crystals. I mean, why? You have to see scientifically reasons. But basically, they're like eyes of the planet. That's how I see them. But also, every memory of the planet go to crystal because they have this incredible capacity to condense light, condense electricity, condense everything, memory too. And if you really tune to the crystals, which ancient, you know, civilization did, you can actually tap to that memory and they definitely can, you know, affect energetically. I mean, when I work in crystals in Brazil, in this piece that you saw, you know, the standing objects, yes. People will stay there and have to clean the crystals every day because with the water or sage or put them on the sunlight because they absorb all negativity. They become black. It's kind of incredible. And if you're really exposed to crystals for a long time, I mean, you can feel dizziness, you can faint. There's so many, you know, scientifically explanation about the crystals today. But now, in one small little capsule, tiny, you can have entire memory of the planet sent into the spaceship that, you know, that we are sending it into other galaxies. So everything can be condensed in a little tiny piece of crystal.
Can I push you for one favorite crystal though?
Yeah. You know, to me the most favorite crystal is absolutely clear quartz with the inside the water. There is water and pieces of tourmaline because they can be mixed. Tourmaline is something that really, you know, I create this entire idea of the body of the human in relation to the body of the planet. So the crystals are eyes of the our eyes, the planet eyes is crystal. Tourmaline is the liver. Amethyst is the soul. The rose quartz is the heart, and so on and so on. So all the, you know, the hematite is actually the blood from us because it's blood of the planet, and the copper is the nerve system. So this is like equivalent of the crystal body and planet body and human body.
So get all of those. Get all of those and put them out, yes.
We ask every guest if you could do an imaginary art heist and take home any artwork or object or building or anything around the world or performance, and you could bring it home with you, what would you take?
What I will have. Wow. I would love to have Van Gogh Night Sky, the last painting he painted before he kills himself. Because this, if you look this night sky, and just that he really understood the molecule of energy, that he actually, his paintings are energy molecules. And if you look really deeply, you can be affected. Incredible. So Night Sky, Van Gogh. Wow. Then what's the next one?
What's your favorite color?
Oh, right now is red. I really love some kind of, but not kind of dark red, really bright, almost orange red. It's so energizing. It's just really color. But actually, it's not true. I don't have, I have three colors, and they're primers, you know, red, yellow, and blue, all three. And all three from different reasons. And it's like relating to three marinas, so I can't really divide them.
What color is bullshit marina?
The bullshit marina is definitely yellow.
And what is the best advice you've ever received?
The best advice I ever received, it's from my teacher the long time ago, or the painting teacher, when he said, if you're making drawings with your right hand and you're so good that you can make them even with closed eyes, immediately change to left one, because that means you're repeating yourself. But always make the work to surprise yourself.
Always make the work to surprise yourself. And what is the work that's going to surprise us in the future? Because you're very always forward thinking. What's coming next for us?
Yeah, but I didn't make it yet.
All right.
So let me make it.
It's pretty wild how busy you are at the moment. You know,
I am already working on the next work, which is going to be in Manchester Festival in 2025.
Wow.
And it's to do with the Balkan and erotic, and really lots of erotic. I want to explore erotic energy because it's something that we never really kind of, we always kind of mistaking erotic and vulgar, and the pornography is very different. I want to create erotic as a spiritual experience.
With an audience?
With audience.
Wow, okay, I look forward to this. This sounds great.
I was wondering whether we're going to see Marina Abramovic in space. I heard you wanted to go to space.
You know, I asked the Bronson, I went to this Necker Island. I was invited as a speaker. And I say to him, you know, I really want you to give me one-way ticket and I don't come back. He refused.
You wouldn't be scared to go to space?
Yeah, but can you imagine, in my age, I just want to know what it's all about. And of course, you die anyway. So why not, at least in that way?
Incredible way to end the episode.
Yeah.
Thank you so, so much.
It was not bad. It's not bad.
Incredible.
So for everyone listening, we'll be posting images on our Instagram at TalkArt, and you can visit at Abramovic Institute on Instagram as well. And Marina has the most amazing website, and there are so many books we'll be linking to.
And
those
the RA
as well.
Show, how much longer is that?
The RA Show is on until the beginning of January.
1st of January.
Yeah, 1st of January, okay, literally the
wonderful.
Beginning of January.
It's wonderful.
And yeah, and we'll be back very soon. Thank you
thank
so
you,
much,
Marina.
We love
thank
you.
You. There's your five.
Thank you. We'll be back soon. Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.